Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Story 1. I grew up in a little village on the northwest coast of Norway called Frøya. Just cliffs, cold sea, and a few hundred people clinging to wind-warped houses. I never planned to stay there past my 20s, but after Dad died, I took over the fishing boat. Someone had to. There aren't many choices in places like that. You fish or you move. This happened 2 years ago, late November. I remember the exact date because of how ordinary the morning started. Gray sky, choppy water, and the kind of cold that seeps into your joints. I'd gone out to check crab pots near Smola. Took the Skjervøy alone, like I usually did. Now I know how that sounds already, going out alone in that part of the sea, with a storm forecast rolling in by nightfall. But it wasn't unusual. You time it right, and you're back before it hits. That's what I told myself. And I knew those waters like the back of my hand. About an hour after I dropped the last pot, the weather turned quicker than expected. The clouds thickened, and the wind started howling. Not gusting, howling, like something screaming through the fjords. I should have turned back right then, but greed got the better of me. The pots had looked promising. I figured I'd haul one more string and head back. When I bent to hook the buoy, I noticed something in the distance. Not a boat, at least not a whole one, just a jagged piece of hull bobbing wrong on the water. My first thought was wreckage. Happens sometimes, but then it moved deliberately like it was steering toward me. There was no engine, no oars, no sail, just that half boat gliding through the swells. I squinted through the sleet, trying to make out more detail, and then I saw it. Something was standing in it, not sitting, standing, tall, shoulders hunched forward like it had to duck under a ceiling that wasn't there. Its hair, or what I thought was hair, whipped around in the wind, thick and roped like seaweed. The face was worse than anything I've ever seen. And I've seen drowned men. This wasn't drowned. This thing was rotted and slick, with skin pulled back over bone, mouth wide open like it was screaming. But I heard nothing. Nothing. I reached for the throttle without looking. My fingers slipped twice before I got a grip. The Skjervøy lurched as I turned her around, the engine coughing under the wind. I didn't look back. I knew I didn't want to see it again. But then came the knock. Not on the hull, on the cabin door. Three slow knocks, knock, knock, knock. The door was locked. I hadn't heard anything climb aboard, and I didn't want to believe anything could. "Who's there?" I called out, instantly hating how pathetic it sounded. No answer, just the sound of water. Sloshing, but too heavy, like something dragging. I backed away from the door, one hand fumbling under the bench for the emergency flare gun. I'd never used it before. But suddenly I wanted it in my hand more than I've ever wanted anything. Another knock. This time from the other side of the cabin. I turned, heart hammering. There was no way. That side faced open water. Nothing could get there unless it flew or floated. I didn't check the window. I fired the flare, straight through the ceiling. The red light blinded me for a second, then filled the cabin with an eerie glow, bouncing off every wet surface. I saw it then. Just a flash, outside the porthole. An eye, big, black, staring in. I dropped the gun and dove for the throttle again, pushing it to full. The boat screamed and surged forward. I kept it pointed dead ahead, not caring where land was, just needing to be away. And that's when the water erupted beside me. It didn't dive, it rose, like it had been waiting under the surface. Something huge slammed into the side of the boat and sent it listing hard. I went down, slammed my head into the corner of the console, and everything went white for a second. When I looked up, the cabin door was open. It hadn't been before. And the inside was soaked, dripping with seawater. Kelp strands clung to the ceiling. A smell like old fish guts and rot hit me so hard I gagged. Then I heard the whisper, not in my ears, in my head, like something brushing against my brain. Join us. I don't remember steering the boat after that. I don't remember turning or throttling down. I just remember the shoreline coming into view, lights from the dock, someone yelling my name. They said I was blue-lipped and shaking, eyes wide like I'd seen a ghost. They were wrong. I hadn't seen a ghost. I'd seen something older. Something that didn't belong to the world of the living or the dead. I spent the night in the clinic. They pumped me full of warm fluids and chalked it up to hypothermia, maybe mild concussion. Nobody believed me, not really. They smiled and nodded and said I'd probably seen a whale breach or driftwood that looked like something else. But that boat I saw, that half-wrecked hull, it wasn't in my head. Story 2. I'm not the kind of person who jumps at shadows. I grew up in the hills above Foča, Bosnia, raised on stories that were meant to keep kids from wandering too far into the woods, not to actually scare us. I'm 27 now, a forestry technician. I know the land like my own palm. But that night, I learned some stories weren't meant to scare. They were meant to warn. It happened last October. My cousin Marco had called me to check on his sheep. He had to go to Sarajevo for a funeral, and something had been spooking the animals. They'd been making noise at night, loud, panicked bleating, and a few had gone missing. Wolves, I figured, nothing unusual. I left after sunset because I had to finish paperwork for the office. Marco's land is maybe a 30-minute hike from my place. The forest was quiet. Dry leaves crunched under my boots. I had a headlamp on, shotgun slung over my shoulder, more for show than anything. The moon was full, but behind clouds, casting everything in dull blue. When I got to the pasture, the sheep were bunched up near the fence, breathing fast, their eyes reflecting my light like scattered coins. That was the first thing that felt wrong. Usually they sleep or graze calmly at night, but they were frozen, all facing the same direction, toward the woods on the east slope. I scanned the tree line. Marco's an idiot, I muttered to myself. Should have built a proper fence. That's when I heard it, a wet dragging sound, slow, then a thud. I aimed my light toward the noise. Nothing, just trees cold and still. Then there was this screech. Not like a bird, not like anything. It was human, almost, but too high, too strained. It went through me, like my insides flinched. Who's there? I shouted, trying to sound firm. I didn't expect a response, but I got one. I see you. It was whispery, stretched out, like something learning how to use a voice. I thought it was someone playing a prank, maybe a junkie. I clicked the safety off the shotgun just in case. Then I saw it. Something shot from the trees, thin and pale, crawling fast on all fours, but with limbs that moved wrong, like broken branches. It moved toward me, then leapt. Before I could react, it landed on my back. Light exploded in front of my eyes as I fell forward into the mud. The wind knocked out of me. It didn't weigh much, like a kid maybe, but it gripped me hard. Its hands were long, too long, bony with claws at the end, wrapped around my shoulders. Then it screamed into my ear. I can't explain the sound. It wasn't just loud. It felt like it pierced through my skull. It was pain and sadness and fear all at once, like every terrible thing I'd ever felt shoved into one blast of sound. My vision blurred. My teeth clenched so hard my jaw popped. And then I saw things. My father's face, dead and cold in the casket. Sheep scattered in a field, their necks torn out. My own face pale, lifeless, eyes open and unblinking on a muddy forest floor. I screamed. I screamed and rolled, slamming my back into the ground, into rocks, into anything, trying to shake it off. It didn't budge. Get off! I shouted. Get the fuck off me! Then I remembered the knife on my belt. I reached, pulled it, and stabbed over my shoulder blindly. Nothing. I stabbed again, harder. Nothing. But it let go. It didn't fall. It vanished. I mean that literally, it wasn't there anymore. One second its weight was crushing me, the next the pressure was gone like it had never been there. I scrambled to my feet, gasping, heart pounding, knife still in hand, shotgun lost somewhere in the mud. The sheep were gone. Not just scattered, gone. The whole pen was empty. And then I noticed something else. Silence, not forest silence, not nighttime quiet. Dead silence, no insects, no wind, no creak of trees. It was like the world had been muted. And then, off to the right, I saw it again. Standing upright now, just inside the tree line. Its body was long and thin, like someone stretched it too far.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Pale skin, head too big for its body. No eyes, just hollow pits where eyes should have been. And it smiled. God help me, it smiled. It raised one long finger, pointed to me, then to the sky. And it spoke one word, tomorrow. Then it vanished again, not ran, not faded, just blinked out. I didn't run. I couldn't. My legs wouldn't move. I just stood there, knife dripping mud, listening to the sound of my own breath, ragged and fast. Eventually, I turned and walked, stumbled. I don't remember getting home. The next day, I went back, in daylight, with friends. We found one sheep. Its body was ripped open, head twisted completely around. The rest were never found. And that night, I waited for tomorrow. But nothing came. Nothing ever came. That was 3 months ago. And I haven't slept a full night since. I don't go to the forest alone anymore. I moved in with my girlfriend in town. Story 3. I was never into ghost stories or old Swedish folklore. Grew up outside Karlstad, moved to Umeå for uni, and now I work maintenance for the municipality. Nothing glamorous, mostly pipe checks, lighting faults, and complaints about sewage smell in the wrong places. Boring stuff. But last summer, I got sent out to check a drainage issue near a small creek behind a retirement community just east of town. July 9th. I'll never forget that date. It had rained the whole week before, and the water levels were higher than usual. The creek, narrow but deep, runs into a larger pond about 200 meters from the maintenance road. There's a man-made spill gate there from the 1960s, rusted to hell but technically still functioning. I was supposed to inspect the overflow valves because the old lady living closest to it kept reporting strange water noises at night. Management thought it was raccoons or maybe loose debris. I parked the van around 2 p.m., walked the path with my gear, basic stuff, wrench, gloves, flashlight, notebook. The air felt heavy, still soaked with humidity, even though the sun was out. No wind, no bird song, just that humming silence you get in isolated spots where even the insects seem like they're waiting for something. The moment I stepped off the path onto the grass slope toward the water, I felt this strange resistance in my chest, like walking into a room full of static. I figured I was just tired. I'd been working overtime all week, but still, it felt off. There's a concrete ledge where the old spill gate sits, about waist high, moss covered, chipped from decades of frost. The water beneath it moves slow, but it's black, too dark to see through. I crouched, started checking the rusted bolts, then froze. There was music, a violin, not from far away. It was close, close enough that I could hear the individual notes, crisp and sorrowful, playing some tune I'd never heard before. My first thought was, someone's got a speaker hidden in the bushes, but there was no distortion, no static hum. It was real, live. I turned my head slowly. A man stood knee-deep in the middle of the creek, about 10 meters from me, thin, pale, completely naked. His back was turned, so I couldn't see his face, but his skin had that waxy, waterlogged look, like he'd been soaking for days. His hair was shoulder-length and jet black, slick with water. He held a violin, and he was playing it like he wasn't standing in cold, chest-high water, like he belonged there. I remember whispering, "What the fuck?" Then he stopped playing. No warning. The bow froze mid-stroke, and he turned his head slightly, just enough to show part of his face. His eye caught mine. It was all black, no white, just glossy, bottomless black. My legs wouldn't move. I wasn't even breathing. It felt like my mind was getting sucked into something through that eye. And then, the worst part, he smiled. But it wasn't like a normal smile. It was too wide. His lips stretched way too far, like the muscles weren't built for that shape, but did it anyway. His teeth were jagged, gray, and looked more like tiny bones than anything human. Then the music started again. Except I wasn't hearing it with my ears anymore. It was in my head, the same tune, but now I could feel it pulsing in my chest. It filled everything, every thought, every inch of space in me. I stood up without meaning to. My tools dropped. I stepped forward, right up to the edge of the spill gate, and looked down into the water. I wanted to go in. That's what terrified me more than anything. I wanted to step into that black water. It looked warm, inviting. The music was telling me it would feel good, like sleep, like peace. My left foot moved before my right. I was ankle deep before I even realized. Then I heard something else. Hey! A voice, real this time. A man's voice coming from the woods behind me. I turned so fast I slipped and fell into the water, soaking my side. But the spell, whatever that was, broke. It was Leonard, one of the older groundskeepers from the community. He'd been walking his dog along the trail and saw me from the tree line. Said I looked like I was floating toward the gate. I scrambled out, shivering even though the sun was hot. When I turned back, the man in the creek was gone. No ripples, no footprints. Just black water and silence. Leonard asked what I was doing out there, and I said something stupid like, I thought I heard music. He didn't laugh. He went quiet, then nodded slowly and said, Neckin's been there since before the road was built. My uncle saw him in 62. He never swam again. I didn't reply. I just packed my stuff, left the site, and reported a blocked drain. Never went back. The lady who made the noise complaint, she passed away 2 days later, drowned, in her bathtub. No sign of a struggle. I told my supervisor I wouldn't take jobs near that creek anymore. He laughed it off. I didn't care. I haven't gone near open water since. Story 4. It's been 12 years and I still can't drive that stretch of road without checking the rearview mirror every 5 seconds. My name's Eric. I was born and raised in Sunne, a quiet town in central Sweden. The kind of place with more trees than people and winters that feel like they last half your life. I work maintenance at a retirement home now. Nothing fancy. But back in 2012, I was doing delivery runs for a small logging company. Mostly timber, sometimes fuel, sometimes just parts. It was boring work until that one night just outside Gressmark. That stretch of Route 62? Don't take it after dark. I mean it. I was behind schedule that evening. We'd had a busted axle in the yard and I'd waited almost 4 hours for a replacement to arrive from Karlstad. By the time I hit the road, it was past 10 p.m. and a thick fog had crept down off the hills like it always does when the air gets too still. I should have waited till morning. I know that now. My cargo that night was just chains and toolboxes. Nothing worth much. I was coming down the slope past Sudra Longberget, crawling along at maybe 40 kilometers per hour because of the fog. Visibility was crap. Even the deer weren't moving. Then I saw something on the shoulder. It looked like a bundle of rags at first, maybe trash or an animal hit earlier. I tapped the brakes. As I got closer, I realized it was a kid, a small child, maybe 3 or 4 years old, standing dead still on the roadside, wearing some old-fashioned tunic thing that barely reached its knees. No shoes, pale legs, arms dangling. I slammed the brakes and rolled the window down. Hello? Are you all right? No answer. I stepped out. My boots hit the gravel and crunched louder than they should have. Everything was dead silent. The fog wrapped around me like a blanket. I walked closer, and that's when the child looked up at me. Its eyes were completely black. Not shadowed, just black. And its face, God, it wasn't right. Pale, yes, but too still. Like a porcelain doll that had been out in the cold too long. The thing opened its mouth and said, in a perfectly calm voice, Carry me. That's it. Just those two words. I stepped back, heart thudding. The air felt too thick, like I was breathing underwater. I turned to bolt back to the cab, but I didn't hear footsteps. Just wait. My back suddenly bent forward. Something impossibly heavy had landed on me. I staggered, nearly fell. I screamed, but nothing came out. No sound. I twisted, flailing, trying to throw whatever it was off me. But it was like it had fused to my spine. I could feel small arms around my neck, bony legs tightening around my waist. And weight. God, the weight. It started small but grew fast. My knees buckled. I collapsed onto the road, crawling forward like a dying dog. "Take me to hallowed ground," it whispered in my ear. Its voice wasn't childlike anymore. It was deeper, angry, hollow. I could feel its breath ice cold against the side of my face. I must have crawled 50 meters before I realized the road was stretching. No matter how far I moved, the forest stayed the same. The fog never broke. It was like I was locked in some loop, and the weight kept growing. I swear it had to be over 100 kilos by then. My ribs creaked. Blood leaked from my nose. "Name me," it said. "I don't know your name," I gasped. I don't know who you are," it screamed, not loud, not human, just wrong. My ears bled. I swear they did. I tried to stand, but my legs wouldn't respond. The thing gripped tighter. I was never named, never carried to consecrated ground, buried in silence, alone, under moss. Then it started sobbing. Not a human cry, more like a wet, gurgling sound. It echoed in my skull. "I'm sorry," I kept repeating. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." The weight lifted. Just like that, it was gone. I was lying in the middle of the road, clothes soaked, ears ringing, knees scraped raw. The fog was still there, but thinning. My truck was idling where I'd left it. The rearview mirror hung from one wire. The passenger side door was open. I didn't see the child again. But in the seat beside me, when I finally forced myself back into the truck, was a small handprint. Black, like soot, still damp. No matter what I did, wiping, scraping, even burning the seat, it wouldn't come off. The worst part? About a week later, a team clearing brush near that stretch of road dug up something. Tiny bones, infant bones, wrapped in an old wool tunic, just like the one I saw that night. No one claimed them. No missing persons reports, nothing on record. They gave it a proper burial at the churchyard in Lisvik. The next morning, the handprint on my seat was gone. I moved out of Suna the next year. Haven't driven Route 62 since. Story 5. I never told anyone this before. Not properly, anyway. Not even my brother. He just thinks I had a breakdown that night in the woods behind the old quarry. But I didn't. I live in a council flat just outside Leicester. Ratby, to be exact. It's one of those estates with gray brick homes and overgrown alleys behind the garages, where the kids all smoke at 15 and the streetlights cut out around midnight. I work as a night security guard at a logistics depot. Boring job, but it leaves my days free, which is how I ended up hiking the Charnwood Forest trails on a chilly afternoon last November. I was trying to do something healthy for once. I'd been on antidepressants since August and figured a bit of walking and fresh air might help. It had rained the night before, so the dirt paths were slop, and most of the trail signs were covered in graffiti or broken. I wasn't exactly prepared. I only had my work boots on and a meal deal in my bag. But it felt good getting out of the estate for a few hours. No cars, no sirens, just wind in the trees. The plan was to loop back before dark, but I took a wrong turn. I was near some old farmland, close to the ruins of an old priory. I'd passed a stone wall half buried in ivy, and saw what looked like a sunken footpath leading down to a shadowy grove. It wasn't on the map, but I was curious. I figured it was an old sheep trail or something. I stepped over the wall. That's when things started to feel wrong. It got quiet. Not peaceful quiet, just emptied out. Like even the wind didn't want to go down there. The trees were different too. All twisted, black-limbed, like they'd burned from the inside but never fell. I noticed scratch marks on the trunks, deep gouges like claws. I told myself it was badgers or deer, but it didn't look like that. They were higher up than any badger could reach, and too deliberate, like something had tried to dig through the bark with its fingers. I should have turned around then, but I kept going. Down in the hollow there was a rock face, low, wet with moss, and cracked open like a mouth. A shallow cave, just barely big enough to crouch into. Something about it made my skin crawl. There were scraps of fabric caught in the brambles around it. Old fabric, faded blue and yellow, like from kids' jackets. I backed up, heart racing. Then I heard it. Breathing, not mine. I froze. It came from the cave. Deep animal breathing, wet and uneven, like someone with pneumonia trying to sleep. And then, slow scraping, like claws on stone. I whispered, "Hello?" Because that's what you do when you're a bloody idiot. Nothing. Then a voice, low and cracked like wind through gravel. "Boy!" It wasn't a question, it was a greeting. I turned to run, I swear I did, but my legs locked, I couldn't move, couldn't even scream. Something stepped out of the cave. She looked wrong, not like a ghost, not transparent or floaty. She was solid, real, an old woman hunched and filthy, with skin the color of ash and teeth too long to be human. Her eyes glowed yellow like a cat's in the dark, and her hands, Jesus Christ, her hands. They were blue-black, leathery, and ended in curved, steel-like claws. I could hear them clicking together when she walked. She sniffed the air. "You've no mother near," she said, "nor priest." I wanted to scream, to run, to do anything, but I just stood there, tears running down my cheeks, frozen stiff as she walked up to me, slow and deliberate. Her breath stank, sour and metallic, like old blood. She reached out one claw and brushed my face. I flinched but still couldn't move. Her touch burned cold. "I miss the wailing," she said. "You'll do." And then, God help me, she opened her mouth, wider than it should have gone. Her jaw cracked as it unhinged, and I saw something wet and twitching in her throat. She lunged. That's when I blacked out. When I came to, I was lying in the mud halfway up the slope. It was full dark. I was soaking wet and shaking. My boots were gone, and the laces from my hoodie had been tied in knots around my wrists, like someone had tried to drag me. But I was alive, barely. I crawled out of there, half blind, lungs burning, didn't even look back. I followed the stars and the motorway noise until I found the road, collapsed into a ditch. A lorry driver found me just before dawn. At the hospital, I told them I'd fallen and hit my head. They did scans, nothing wrong. My brother picked me up, furious, thought I'd gone on a bender. I didn't argue, but the mark stayed, three faint lines across my cheek, like healed over burns, claw-shaped. They're still there now, barely visible in the mirror. Story 6. I was born and raised in a little lakeside town called Ruokolahti, up in southeast Finland. It's quiet here, too quiet sometimes. Tourists show up in summer for the cottages and the cold water dips. But most of the year, it's just locals, and even we keep to ourselves. I'm 28 now, and I work as a forestry tech, so I spend most days in the woods checking wildlife cams and tagging tree health. What happened last year, I've only told it to two people. I'm telling it here because maybe someone else has seen what I saw, or maybe writing it out will make it feel less real. I doubt it. So it was mid-May, ice had fully melted, but the lake was still freezing. I was assigned to take depth measurements at a remote section of Lake Simam. There's this little peninsula that juts out into the water where few people go. No houses, no piers, just reeds and silence. I took the workboat out early and docked near the reeds. My equipment was just a sonar stick and GPS. Boring stuff. At least I thought so. I was maybe 15 meters out, wading in with the pole to take depth readings. Waist deep, rubber waders on. The lake was dead calm. No wind. But then I felt it. This sudden stillness, like sound had been sucked away. No birds, not even the little slap of water on my legs. I turned just to check behind me. Nothing. No one. I took another step forward. Then I heard someone humming. I froze. It was faint but close, like maybe a few meters out, in the water ahead of me. It was a woman's voice. Low, almost like a lullaby. But weirdly slow and drawn out, like she was singing underwater. At first, I thought I was imagining it, maybe something in the reeds. But it got louder, and there was this wet quality to it, like if you poured honey into a bucket and tried to hum through it. I started backing up toward shore, real careful. I still couldn't see anything. The water was murky, blackish, even though it was shallow. I got about a meter back when I saw something move under the surface, just a flash. Pale skin and something greenish, like algae in long strands. I stopped breathing. Then her head came up. Just her head, like she'd been kneeling on the bottom of the lake. Long dark hair dripping, and this face that looked too perfect, like a doll. Big eyes, lips slightly parted, still humming. But it wasn't right. Her skin was smooth but pale like wax, and her eyes, they didn't blink. Not once. She just stared at me. I took another step back. My boots sank into the mud and I stumbled. She didn't move. Then she smiled. That smile, I'll never forget it. It didn't reach her eyes. And when her lips pulled back, there was something wrong with her teeth. They were too small, all of them, like rows and rows of fish teeth. The humming stopped. She lunged, not swam, lunged. So fast, like she wasn't swimming at all, but being yanked toward me by something underwater. Her arms shot out of the water, and that's when I saw them. Webbed fingers, long, sharp nails. Her upper body looked human, but slick with some kind of film. And beneath the water, I saw a massive silver-scaled tail whip up behind her. I screamed and kicked backward, fell into the reeds. She slammed into the spot I'd been standing, arms clawing through the water. I crawled, boots full of mud, and grabbed a branch on shore. I didn't look back until I hit dry ground. She was gone. No splash, no sound. The water was flat again, perfectly still. But something was wrong with my leg. I looked down and saw three long slashes through the rubber of my waders. No blood, she hadn't broken the skin. But whatever grabbed me had claws, real ones. I backed away from the lake, still staring at the water. Then I saw bubbles, just a few, and another sound, not humming this time, breathing, slow, raspy breathing, like from something with gills. I left everything, GPS, depth stick, even my backpack. I sprinted through the woods like a maniac, half tripping over roots. Didn't stop until I reached the ranger's cabin. They thought I'd had a panic attack. I told them a bear chased me into the water. That was easier. I went back once, weeks later, from a cliff above the lake, just to see. The water was smooth as glass. No birds, no insects, just the lake, perfectly still. I don't go near lakes now. I moved to Helsinki and took a desk job. I don't even shower without checking the drain, because I know what I saw. Story 7. I don't talk about this often, and I know how it's going to sound. But it happened. I didn't imagine it. My name's Evan Gauthier, and I grew up in Waskaganish, a Cree village off the coast of James Bay in northern Quebec. I work maintenance for the airport now, but back then I was 19, spending my first winter working trap lines with my cousin Noel, way out past the East Main River. The plan was simple. 5 days out at the cabin, check the lines, skin what we caught, bring it back. Basic stuff. Nothing supernatural, nothing weird. Just cold, trees, and silence. We took the snowmobiles out that Tuesday. It was already minus 35 degrees Celsius by the time we reached the line shack. A squat little place with no insulation, barely enough firewood, and a door that swelled so bad in the cold it barely shut right. But it was ours. We'd done this a dozen times. We weren't kids. Night falls fast up there in winter. By 4, it's pitch black. That second night, Noel went out to piss behind the shed. He was gone longer than usual, maybe 7 minutes, and when he came back in, he looked off. Real quiet. I asked him if everything was good, and he just shook his head and said, "Thought I heard something crunching out in the bush, but could have been wind." That should have been it, but he didn't sleep. Just sat there in his sleeping bag by the stove, holding his hatchet, eyes wide. Every little creak outside made him flinch. Around 3 a.m., he said, "There's something wrong out there." I asked him what he meant. He didn't answer right away. Then he leaned in and whispered, "It's watching the cabin." I heard it breathing. It's close. I told him he was tired, that the cold messes with your head. You start hearing stuff when it's that quiet, but inside I was spooked. You don't say things like that lightly out here. You don't make jokes about what's in the woods, especially not in Cree territory. The third night is when it happened. It was colder than before. Frigid, dead silent, the kind of cold that eats sound. We were inside, playing cards to stay awake. Noel stopped mid-hand and turned to the door. "You hear that?" he whispered. I held my breath. Then I heard it. A long, dragging sound, like something heavy being pulled slowly through snow. Not a moose. Not a bear. Something on 2 feet. And then, scratching. Low, slow scrapes against the door. Followed by breathing. Wet, ragged, right up against the wood. I mouthed, "Don't move!" Noel had the shotgun in his lap, but I knew from his face he wasn't going to fire it unless he had to. We just sat there frozen, listening. The scratching moved, up the door, like it was feeling around. Then something knocked. 3 slow, deliberate taps. Knock, knock, knock. We didn't say a word, didn't breathe, just waited. Then it started whispering. I swear on my life I heard it. A voice, thin and crackling, like dry leaves rustling in a fire. "Hungry?" We bolted. I don't know why. Instinct, I guess. We pushed the back window open, and Noel jumped out first, yanking me behind him. We didn't grab our bags, our gear, nothing. Just ran into the trees. We ran until my lungs burned, until I couldn't feel my fingers. No trail, no path, just snow and cold, and trees that looked like claws in the dark. After maybe half an hour of running blind, we stopped. I turned back. The shack was barely visible between the trees, lit by the dying orange glow of the stove through the warped window. Then we saw it. Something was standing in front of the door, its shoulders hunched, long arms dangling to its knees. It looked wrong, too tall, gaunt, like it had once been a man but had stretched somehow, grown past what a body's supposed to hold. Its skin was gray, pulled tight over bones that jutted out sharp as knives. And its mouth, God, its mouth was wide and torn, and I swear it had no lips, just teeth and blood down its chin. It was sniffing the air like a dog. Then it turned its head, not its whole body, just the head, fast and twitchy, toward us. It saw us. I don't remember running. I just remember falling, trees whipping past. Noel screaming something behind me. I kept thinking, if I trip, I die. We didn't stop until the sun came up. Eventually, we made it to a ranger's cabin downriver, collapsed on the porch, frostbitten, half out of our minds. The guy called in a medevac. They treated us for exposure, gave us warm blankets, tried to get us to explain what happened. We said it was a bear. They didn't believe us, not really, but no one pressed. People up here understand that sometimes things happen in the woods, and sometimes you just don't talk about them. Noel doesn't trap anymore, moved to Valdor, and won't come north again. I still go back sometimes, but never alone, and never in winter. The cabin's still there. At least it was last I checked. But the door was open when I returned that spring, just wide open like someone had left in a hurry. Inside, everything was frozen solid. Our food, our sleeping bags, even the stove had gone cold. But something had been there. There were drag marks on the floor. And outside, by the tree line, I found something half buried in the snow. A tongue, black, dry, and frozen stiff, just lying there. We never spoke about that part. Didn't see the point. What could we say? You can think what you want, that we were tired, scared, hallucinating. But I know what we saw. And if you ever find yourself walking alone in the forest up north, especially when the trees go still, and the wind dies, and the air gets too quiet, don't stop, don't listen, and whatever you do, don't open the door. Story 8. I didn't even know about the Curie until it was too late. Nobody talks about it where I'm from, those that believe in it anyway. We're up in North Yorkshire, a village called Runswick, just off the moors. Small place, tight-knit, quiet. The sort of town where people die in the same cottage they were born in. But every now and then, someone just disappears, walks off into the fog, never comes back. They blame the weather, the cliffs, the sea. But I know better now. I work maintenance out by the radio tower near Ecton Moor. Isolated stretch, surrounded by gorse and peat bogs. A bleak place even on sunny days, and on this particular afternoon, the fog had rolled in hard. Visibility was maybe 20 feet. It clung to your clothes, made your skin feel damp. The tower had an electrical fault, so I went out alone. I parked at the lay-by and followed the service trail. I'd walked it 100 times before, but that day I saw something new. Off to the side, maybe 10 yards from the path, there was this crude mound of rocks and an old wooden cross stuck into the earth. No name, just 1871 carved into the wood. Looked like someone had left it recently. The earth was too neat. I don't know what possessed me, but I went over to it. Just stood there staring, thinking maybe it was some old traveler's grave. But as I turned to leave, I felt something strange, like static, but under my skin. It wasn't the wind, and it wasn't cold exactly, but it made the hairs on my neck rise. I shook it off and carried on to the tower. Didn't think much of it again until I got home that night. My dog Toby wouldn't come near me, just stood in the doorway and growled low. First time he'd ever done that. I chalked it up to something I'd stepped in. But later that night, just as I was drifting off, I heard whispering. Not loud, not even clear. Just a low murmur right behind my ear. It jolted me upright. I checked the room. Nothing there. Thought maybe it was the wind again, or I was dreaming. But then it happened again the next night, and the one after that. By the end of the week, it wasn't just the whispering. I'd wake up with the sheets pulled halfway off the bed, cold fingers brushing the back of my neck. One night I saw something crouched at the foot of my bed. Not a person exactly. Too thin, too still. And the face. It wasn't right. It didn't move. Just stared. I started dreaming about the moors. Not normal dreams, real ones. I'd be walking the same stretch of path near that grave. Fog so thick I couldn't see my hands. And always I'd hear that same voice calling me. Come back. You left me. Like it knew me. I tried telling my sister, but I could see it in her face. She thought I was losing it. You've been stressed, Gav, she said. You work alone out there all the time. Maybe it's just getting to you. Yeah, that's what I thought too, until I started seeing its face on people. I was at the co-op paying for a sandwich, and the cashier looked up, and just for a second, her face shifted. Her eyes were too far apart, and her mouth stretched too wide, like it wasn't built to smile properly. Then it was gone, back to normal. But I dropped the sandwich and ran out the store like I was on fire. Things escalated fast after that. The voice got louder, started talking to me like it knew everything about me, told me things I hadn't said aloud in years. My ex's name, my mom's last words, said them with my voice. I'd wake up to it sitting beside me on the bed whispering, "You're not free, not yet. Come back." I tried leaving town for a few days. Thought maybe if I got away from the moors, it'd stop. Drove down to Whitby, stayed in a B&B, didn't tell anyone. First night was quiet. I thought maybe it had worked. Second night, I looked in the mirror and saw it behind me. Just standing there, staring. Thin as a rail and pale like wet bone. Its face was mine. Not similar, identical. Except the eyes. They were empty. I don't remember much after that, just this intense urge to go back. I left in the middle of the night, didn't pack, didn't check out, drove straight back to Ecton Moor, didn't tell anyone. I just kept thinking, I have to go back to that grave. The fog was thick when I arrived. Couldn't see the tower lights at all. I didn't even take a torch. I walked the same path, feeling like I was being pulled. And I could hear it, right behind me. Not footsteps, not breathing, just the sound of it laughing softly. When I reached the grave, I stopped. It was open. Not like someone dug it up, more like it was yawning, like the earth had peeled itself open. I felt my knees give way, and I dropped hard into the heather. I tried to scream, but my voice was gone. Then I felt it behind me. Its fingers touched my shoulders, light, almost gentle, and I heard it speak, right in my ear. You made it. Now watch. I couldn't move. Couldn't even blink. Just lay there as the cold seeped in. I watch frost creep up my arms, breath stall in my throat. I felt everything, but I couldn't scream, couldn't even cry. My body gave up first, then my breath, then even my thoughts started slipping away. Right before it all went black, I heard it say, "You're mine now." And the last thing I saw just before I passed out was the grave starting to close, like it had never been open, like I'd never been there, like I'd always belonged to it. Story 9. I'll start by saying I'm not superstitious. I don't believe in curses or ghosts or whatever else people use to explain things they don't understand. But something happened when I was 18 that I've never been able to explain. And I've tried. God knows I've tried. This happened in 2017 in a township outside Pietermaritzburg, where I grew up. I was staying with my uncle for a few months after I finished school, helping him run his corner shop. He lived in one of those small brick houses with a tin roof that rattles when the wind gets up. Most people in the neighborhood were Zulu, and the older folks still clung to traditional beliefs. I didn't pay it much mind until that night. My uncle's house had a single bedroom, so he let me take it, and he slept on the couch. The first thing I noticed when I moved in was that the bed was weirdly high, like really high, propped up on four breeze blocks, one under each leg. It looked ridiculous. I asked him about it, and he just shrugged and said, "It's to keep the tokoloshe away." I laughed. "Come on, Maloom. That's just a story." He gave me a look. "You think it's a joke until it sits on your chest?" I didn't argue with him. I figured it was just one of those old tales people pass down, like warnings meant for kids. But that night, lying in that awkwardly tall bed, I couldn't shake what he said. I kept picturing something small and dark crawling under me, hiding, waiting. The first few nights were quiet, other than the dogs barking outside and the occasional shout from the street. But on the fifth night, something changed. It was around 2:30 in the morning when I woke up gasping for air, not just a little startled, like full-on choking. My chest felt like it was being crushed. I couldn't move, couldn't scream. My eyes were open, and I swear to God there was something on top of me. I couldn't see its face. It was like a thick black shadow squatting on my chest, just staring. I could feel its weight, its skin like old leather, cold and dry. The smell, it was awful, rot and river mud. I tried to move my arms, but they were pinned, my legs too. I was completely paralyzed, trapped in my own body. The thing started breathing, slow and heavy. I could hear it, feel it, like it was sucking the air out of my lungs. My vision started to blur. My chest burned. Then all at once it whispered something in a language I didn't understand, right into my ear. Words that didn't sound human. Its breath was ice cold. That's when I snapped. I don't know how, but I jerked my arm free and threw it off me. I sat up gasping, soaked in sweat. The room was empty. I switched on the light and looked under the bed. Nothing. Just the concrete floor. My heart was slamming in my chest. I got up and checked the windows. They were still locked. The door hadn't moved. I sat on the edge of the bed for what felt like hours, just shaking. In the morning, I didn't say anything. I didn't want my uncle thinking I'd gone crazy. But when he saw my face, he just nodded once, real slow. "You saw it." I didn't answer. He walked to the back of the house and came back with a small glass bottle filled with brownish liquid. "Put this by the bed. Don't sleep low. Not here. They come for those who mock." I didn't sleep in that room again. I stayed on the couch with the lights on for the rest of the week. When I left to go back home, I didn't say goodbye to that room. I didn't even look at it. To this day, I don't know what it was. I've heard all the rational explanations. Sleep paralysis, stress, exhaustion. But none of that explains the weight, the breath, the whisper in a language I've never heard before or since. And here's the thing that gets me the most. I was on a raised bed. I was on bricks, just like they said you should be. And it still got to me. So you tell me, what the hell was that? Story 10. I should have turned around when the road disappeared. Name's Artyom. I was born and raised in Vitegra, a small northern town in Russia near Lake Onega. Spent my life around the forests. I'm not scared of them. I hunted in them since I was 12. You learn to read the trees, feel the wind, and trust your gut. That night, my gut was screaming, and I ignored it. It was mid-October last year. I was driving my uncle's Lada Niva back from a hunting trip. Just me and my dog, Sharik, a mutt with too much shepherd in him. It was past 9, pitch black, and I was trying to shortcut through a logging road I hadn't used in years. About 15 minutes in, the path started to vanish. Tree limbs hanging lower, mud creeping over the tire tracks. The GPS stopped updating, signal gone. I stopped the engine, cracked the window, and listened. Just wind and branches. Then Sharik growled. Deep, guttural. Not the bark he gave squirrels. This one was from his chest, like he was warning me. I leaned forward and squinted into the dark. Headlights barely reached 10 meters in that fog, but something moved. I swear on my mother's grave, I saw something walk across the road about 50 meters ahead, just on the edge of visibility. Tall, thin, slow. I froze. Didn't speak. Didn't breathe. Just watched. Whatever it was, it didn't make a sound. Not a branch snapped. No leaves rustled. It just slipped between the trees and vanished. I should have reversed right then, but the road was too narrow. No room to turn around. I put it in gear and crept forward. Sharik whined and pressed against my leg. About 30 meters up, I saw the clearing. An old wooden house sat dead center, hunched under the moonlight. The air went heavy. Not just cold, wrong. Thick, like breathing through cloth. I couldn't even hear the engine anymore. It was on, but silent. Radio static hissed out of nowhere. I looked at Sharik. His ears were flat. He wouldn't even look at the house. Now, I'm not an idiot. I know what Baba Yaga is. Every Russian kid does. The witch in the forest. Lives in a house on chicken legs. Eats people. Everyone treats it like a joke. Some fairy tale. But when you see it, not in a book, but real, standing right in front of you, your brain doesn't laugh. It stops. Because that house had legs. They weren't chicken legs, not like the cartoons. They were long, pale, bone-like things that twitched every so often, like they were stretching. The house sat just off the ground, the legs curled under it like a resting spider. I couldn't move. Then the front door creaked open. I didn't see her at first, just the shadow, thin arms, long fingers, bent back. Then she stepped out. Not fast. Slow, creaky, like her bones were trying to remember how to walk. Her face was too long. The nose crooked like it had been broken and never healed right. Her hair hung in greasy strands over one eye. She looked blind, but I knew she saw me. She raised a hand and pointed, right at me. That was enough. I slammed the gear shift into reverse and floored it. Tires screamed, mud flew. I don't even remember if I looked behind me. I just drove. Then the house stood. Those legs straightened. The whole thing lifted up like it was waking from a nap. And it moved, not slow like before. Fast, it came after me. I could see it in the mirrors, its horrible legs crashing through the trees, stepping over boulders. The witch was hanging onto the doorway, her thin frame flapping like a tattered coat in the wind, eyes locked on me. I hit a ditch hard. The Niva bounced, almost flipped. Sharik yelped, but I kept going. Branches clawed at the windows. Something thumped on the roof. I don't know what. My ears were ringing. The house was still behind me, gaining ground. That thing should not have been that fast. Then somehow, I burst through the trees and hit a paved road. The car fishtailed but stayed upright. I gunned it south without thinking. No headlights behind me. No more movement. It was gone. I drove until I saw the first gas station, about 20 kilometers away. Parked crooked, jumped out, dragged Sharik with me. We must have looked insane, me covered in sweat and dirt, the dog trembling like a leaf. Some old guy behind the counter asked if I'd seen a moose. I told him I hit a log, paid for gas, didn't sleep that night. Next day, I went back. I had to see if it was still there. There was no road. I swear to you, nothing. No tire tracks, no ditch, no clearing. Just trees. Solid, untouched forest. I walked for 2 hours in the exact spot. Nothing. I haven't been back since.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.